You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
I'm Tristan Taramino, and this is Sex Out Loud.
That's why I'm literally writing a whole book about my gender.
My mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do.
Where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluids?
Kink and leather have the DNA that can transform not just ourselves, but this culture.
People have abortions more than we want to admit, and abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy.
Someone talks about porn ruining sex. The question for me is, which porn?
I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewish who wouldn't stand next to me at a march.
I just wanted to show polyamory in a way that looks like polyamory.
If you're excited by sexual pleasure and sexual politics, you've come to the right place.
I've been this radical queer agnostic theologian for a long time.
They think that Muslims don't have sex.
There is a very specific history of racism and anti-blackness in this country.
I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again.
We really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Okay, so welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I hope you are continuing to stay safe and well and take care of each other. We are still under quarantine. We are still under stay-at-home orders here in California. I know that's not true everywhere else, but here we are. And we actually weren't going to press record, but then we decided to do because we have been talking about doing this show for a while, and I realized this morning, okay, my brain's not working, that I actually didn't get consent from Raymond to be a part of this show or even be the interviewer of me. So I just told him that, and he said, oh, we should start recording. he was right. So Raymond, how do you... So today's show, content warning, is going to be about a Me Too experience that I had. So we're going to talk about boundary violation, predatory behavior. It could be triggering, activating, or traumatizing to some of you. So take care of yourselves. And because of all that, I realized I just told Raymond we were doing the show and never asked him if he maybe wanted to opt out.
Right. You know, I mean, I was also thinking about this today where I was like, you know, there's a chance we could also be activated as interviewers and as storytellers in the midst of this episode. And I wanted to sort of think about that just to be like, what's that going to feel like? What could that look like? What would I do about it? Just to sort of be prepared, because that's usually what you kind of like to do when you are a PTSD type trauma kid person. Mm-hmm. You like to be prepared for all scenarios. And I realized, I was like, no, I think like, I'm definitely in a very, you know, I think we're all in a pretty fragile, stressed out space. Yes. Right now. But I also feel like I at least have gone into this already been like working on a lot of these tools. And so at least I feel a little bit more like I know what tools to kind of to lean on and to kind of to go to. And when you did first tell me you wanted to do the show, I mean, it definitely was phrased in a very much like, I would like this to happen, but I never feel like, I mean, maybe
oh, you never, right.
We've known each other for so long and, right. And we do have, you know, a certain kind of relationship and rapport and things like that, that I know that if I needed to be like, ooh, I'm not up for that, you would be like, okay, you know. So it definitely, you know, it did put maybe a little bit more on me. Like you said, you didn't ask for consent ahead of time. You just right. put it on me. And then I sort of kind of, you know, waited. And I knew that you would, whatever it was, you would respect it, you know. But it does bring up a good point that, like, you know, you realize this and you're like, okay, well, maybe not, maybe in the future, this is, well, I'll approach it a little bit differently.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and it also brings up a good point too, that just because we have known each other and have been working together for damn near 10 years,
a decade at least.
Yeah. You know, the need to talk about and ask for consent never goes away. Like, it doesn't really matter how connected or how psychic or any of that stuff you feel. It's always good to sort of have those check-in conversations. So I appreciate that you did check in with me, you know, and
I mean, it was at the last minute, the very fucking last minute.
I had the conversation with myself earlier.
Oh, you did. Okay. I wasn't privy to that. So yeah, I just like woke up this morning. Right. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. I do feel like there was some show a year or two ago that there was a guest and you were kind of like, oh, you should come and be on it. And I was like, no, I'm good. And that's really what it was kind of related to is I was all like, I don't really want to talk about that topic. That's not going to make me feel good. I'm not up for that, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So I think that was the other two too. We had even had that previous experience where I knew I could say no to you and you weren't going to like be mad at me.
Okay. Yeah, no. Yeah. I do get mad, but I don't get mad at Raymond really. No. Okay. Should we dive in?
Sure. Yeah. I know nothing about, I want to tell listeners, I know nothing. All I really know is that you wanted me to interview you to talk about your Me Too experience in a sex positive environment.
Yes.
So I don't have really any preparation. It's not like I knew the things as far as like specific questions. So it's going to be an interesting exercise for me, and just really, I want to be an active listener. I want to sort of, you know, let you have the floor, and then just sort of as questions that maybe listeners might have, just sort of maybe try and gently ask them as I come up or whatever. But
yeah. So you're hearing the story for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I feel like, you know, 100 disclaimers. So I'm going to fight that. And also, it is possible for me when telling a story to put myself right back there and to have all the emotions come up. So sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. It's been happening a lot lately while I write my memoir. Like I was wailing, crying in my office, and Eli came in and I was like, he's dying. And you know, this is during COVID, right? So Eli was like, holy shit, who's dying? And I was like, my dad is dying in this chapter, and I'm right back there. So that can sometimes happen. I definitely feel like I've had a lot of space from this experience. So we'll see what happens. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to keep cameras on? Do you feel like that's helpful? Or would you?
I think it's helpful for me to look at you. Yeah.
No, I thought so. Sure. I just wanted to check in.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I was in a sex positive space, an event, a week long event. And you know, I've been to these events, I can't even count how many times, 1,000 times now, all over the world. And I was teaching my gangbang class, actually, which is a fairly new class for me. And the way that it's organized is that I talk about the sort of how-tos and things to keep in mind and tips for safety. And then in between each section, I give people an idea for a kind of gangbang that's like been reinvented, that reworks the sort of old tired narrative and makes space for all genders, all bodies, all identities, all practices, all desires, right? I kind of want to give people like ideas. So there's this idea of like the worship gangbang where the person at the center, which I call the one, is basically all about them, and all the people who are the doers are like, our job is to meet every one of your needs, to worship you, to adore you, vocally, physically, psychically, right? To give people an idea of like sort of out of the box. Yeah. And so as I get into it, I get into sort of a little bit heavier stuff. And one of the examples I gave was this kind of objectification one where the one at the center is maybe humiliated or degraded or used, sort of give over control so that there's like a dominant submissive dynamic where they're the submissive and everyone around them is dominating them. So I got to the Q&A and someone in the very back of the room, which was lit poorly, so I actually couldn't see them, raised his hand, a cis man, and said, and I also share my experiences. This is something I've done in my teaching all along, right? I share my own experiences and I feel comfortable with that. I don't feel coerced to do that. I tell people, oh, in this gangbang, this happened. And I went to a gangbang where I was one of the doers and this happened, you know, just to give people real life experience, you know. So he raised his hand and he said, so have you ever done one of these gangbangs where you are really humiliated and degraded and you have no control whatsoever. And I said, I gave that as a scenario. And he said, no, I mean you, where you're humiliated, you're degraded, you have no control. And I said, well, no, because I'm not into humiliation. So that wouldn't turn me on. So I wouldn't do it. And I'm not sure if he had a follow-up question or whatever, but the rest of the Q&A went on, the rest of the class happened. And then afterwards, you know, I had this definite feeling like that was a dick move.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was a number of things going on there. One is that I felt like as a guy, he was attempting to undermine my authority as the teacher, right? I'm the teacher. I'm in front of the room. I have that power dynamic is firmly in place. And I felt like he was trying to sort of like bring me down a notch.
Yeah.
And make it personal. Like he didn't choose that one scenario for no reason, right? To project on me. Right. And I was like, dick move. Okay. I'm going to sort of brush that off as something men do. People do, but men especially. And it's not cool. And I don't know what that guy looked like. So when he comes out of the light, I see him and I'm like, okay, like noted, like not interested in talking to that guy. So probably a half hour or an hour later, I was on my way to the queer mixer at the event and he found me and I was alone and there weren't a lot of people around and he got in my personal space and he was like, hey, I really want to talk about that scene where you're humiliated, degraded, and you have no control. And I was like, I thought I told you, like, that's not my thing. And he was like, well, I was talking to my wife and some other people about it. And I was like, excuse me?
Okay.
What? And I froze, actually.
Yeah.
I would say that, like, my general reaction to this kind of bullshit is just like set the boundary and walk away. And I have so many people who have over the years said really inappropriate things, made propositions to me, you know, been gross and all this stuff. And I feel very competent when I deal with them. Right.
Yeah.
But in this case, I froze, which is not a usual reaction for me. And then that sort of scared me. So I went immediately to the mixer and I pulled some people who I love aside and told them what happened. They were super validating, super awesome. And they were like, okay, what do you need? Like, what do you need right now? And I was like, okay, you know what? I don't want him to come up to me again. Yeah. We've got like five more days and I don't want to have to deal with him at all. And they were like, great. We're going to, as a group, go approach him and tell him that. And so they did. And so I felt like, okay, I feel a little bit better. Still, I began to experience moments of hypervigilance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because part of this event is like, I'm supposed to be out and about, and I am very out and about. I spend very little time in my room. And the whole point is that folks have, I'm accessible to folks. I'm a regular person there. They can come up to me. They can talk to me. And I make it a point to say that before the event, right? So it's like, I'm quite accessible. I've said, you can come, you know, if I don't want to talk to you, then I'll tell you I don't want to talk to you. But if you see me in the dining hall or by the pool or whatever, come talk to me.
Right.
So they told him that and I felt a little better, but then I started to feel kind of hypervigilant. And then I went to dinner with a bunch of people and ended up with...
Can I pause you for just a second? Will you talk a little bit about what, when you say you feel hypervigilant, what does that feel and look like for you?
I'm sort of scanning the place. Each time I go to a new place, the beach, the dining hall, I'm just sort of scanning to see if he's there.
Like an inventory of who's there. All
that. An inventory of who's there. I'm a little less relaxed. Because that event is like very relaxing for me, and had been. I've been there previously, and it had been a really great event for me. So I'm like less relaxed, feel my body like tense up more, and I'm thinking about it. I can't do anything without thinking about it. Like, is this guy going to approach me? Is he going to be inappropriate with me? Is it going to escalate? No. Because I felt like from the class, he sort of cornered me alone. Yeah. And that felt like an escalation.
Yeah.
So, you know, because I feel like I very clearly said no and set the boundary in the class, and I had 100 witnesses. Right? So I felt like, I still felt like, oh, there is a chance that this guy could come up to me and it could escalate.
Right.
That was like the feeling I was having. So, okay. So I went to this dinner and it was a big group table, and I ended up sitting with someone. This is a very complicated story, but I ended up sitting with someone who I had done a scene with in the dungeon the year before that was very highly charged and very intense. And when I saw him this year, he said, hey, do you kind of like want a rematch? And I had been thinking, actually, I want to like kick it up a notch. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to actually go even further because we had this really good scene and I think this might be fun.
Build on it. Yeah.
So I'm sitting next to that guy, you know, by random. And I said, I'm just a little not myself right now. And so I might not talk, or I'm a little discombobulated. Yeah. And he says, oh, I heard. And as it turns out, he was in the class and he said that was definitely a dick move, but I am very close with that guy's wife. Uh-huh. And so I sort of heard through her, like all the stuff that happened. And, you know, he's really sorry and he really wants to. And I was like, and then like, he was like, you know, he's just, Tristan, he's clueless. Like, he's not in a place that a lot of us are in. He hasn't thought about this stuff. And I was just like, he went on and on. And again, I froze. I didn't want to hear any of his like quote unquote side, but it was like spilled out to me. And then he sort of wrapped up the conversation. This is my memory, by going, but his wife is really hot and I definitely want to fuck her.
Oh, Jesus.
And I was just like, I need to get up from the table now.
Yeah.
So I got up from the table and I went to this like sort of quiet kind of smoking area. No one smokes there. And I just burst into tears and I thought, Tristan, like, where is your fucking judgment? You were like in one day about to go to a really scary, intense place with this guy, play with this guy, right? It's not like I'm playing with like 100 people.
Right.
And this guy is like sort of taking the side of the other guy or trying to explain away this. And then, but then also like brings up his wife, and it was just like so fucked up. And I was like, you too? Really? Yeah. You know, someone I would consider like a good guy seemed to miss the entire point. He also at one point said, you know, I did pull him aside and I told him, you know, when someone's presenting, it's not cool to ask them personal questions. And I was like,
That was
your takeaway?
Problem.
That was your takeaway from the whole thing that you witnessed.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, but I thought like it was an entry point and some other people were talking to, and I was just like, I was shocked and I was like freaked out. And so I went to my room, and that night I didn't come out. I didn't see anyone. A couple of people checked on me and I just like cried for the whole night. And I just felt like sometimes I can get a little black and white with some things. And so I felt like cis men were really letting me down.
Yeah.
They were, even the ones in the space who thought about these issues, who were really good communicators, who I felt like were woke in some senses, like had just fucking let me down.
Right. And that in a space where so much is looking about power and negotiating power and where power is being directed, to then not be able to like apply that same lens in this situation and not see what was happening in front of them.
And I didn't realize I didn't want to know anything about him until after. So then I blamed myself and I felt like, oh, I should have shut that fucking conversation down. As soon as he said, oh, I know, I would have been like, nope, we're not talking about it. Like, I need to eat.
Right.
But I didn't. So I blame myself for that.
You shouldn't blame yourself. I mean,
right.
I mean, I know you are. And that's how it works. If we blame ourselves for the shit, we shouldn't.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Let's just take a commercial break and we'll be back.
I hope you all know by now that lube makes all kinds of sex better. But not all silicone lubes are created equal. You want to make sure you use one with the highest quality, body-safe ingredients. UberLube is a luxurious, high-grade silicone lubricant that's flavorless, unscented, and made from clean, body-friendly ingredients. It's just silicone with a little vitamin E. And that vitamin E leaves a velvety finish that actually moisturizes your skin. There are no additives like parabens or preservatives or petrochemicals. Nope. It's great for vaginal, oral, anal, manual. If you want to rub it or grind it or penetrate it, UberLube is for you. UberLube lets skin feel skin. It enhances touch, not overpowers it. It adds a thin layer that leads to just the right amount of slip while allowing for skin-to-skin sensations. Right now, they're offering Sex Out Loud listeners a special offer, 10% off and free shipping when you use my code, Tristan, at uberlube.com. That's 10% off and free shipping. Just use code Tristan at uberlube, UberLube.com. UberLube lets you feel what you want to feel. I'm sure you follow at least one porn star Instagram account that's been deleted with no explanation. YouTube and Facebook are censoring content, and dating apps are full of bots. It's becoming more and more difficult for people to connect, especially intimately online. MyGirlFund.com allows members to form virtual relationships with amazing women. MyGirlFund.com, you can meet, message, share photos and videos, and cam with women in private. Listen, if you know me, you know that two of my biggest passions are people experiencing pleasure in diverse, shame-free ways, and folks getting paid fairly for their labor. It's really difficult for women to get paid for virtual adult work without risking personal exposure. Many women are willing to do dirty chat or share nude content for money, but safe and discreet platforms are rare. MyGirlFund allows its female members to control their exposure. They connect with who they want to connect with, control how they want to interact, and decide what they charge for these interactions. MyGirlFund has been around since 2009, providing space for people to have the intimate interactions that they want. Sign up at MyGirlFund.com/Tristan and get ready to meet and make connections in a safe, private, adult community.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. If you've been listening, you've noticed this is a different show than we usually do. Raymond is here, and I am telling my Me Too story about some boundary violations that happened in a sex-positive space, and I'm going to wrap up the story itself. So what happened the next night then is one of my play partners, who I adore, came up and said to me, hey, I've got a message for you from fill in the blank, the guy.
Yeah.
And I went...
Wait, just to be clear, is this the original violator?
No, this is not the guy at dinner. Okay, here's a new guy. A new guy in the mix.
Oh, okay.
Who I really love and feel very comfortable with and really trust and I'm friends with outside of this event.
Right.
Comes up to me and says, hey, I've got a message from that guy. And I was like, nope, nope, don't want a message. Don't. And he's like, no, but really, I think you should hear this because, and I'm like, no, I don't have to hear it. I don't have to listen to it. No.
Yeah.
So I walk away and then I'm confronted by this guy who is, let's call him Jerry. Jerry is the sort of liaison between the group who puts on the event and the venue. And Jerry produces these events for a living. And he is very much an old school swinger. He understands that this group is, quote, much different than traditional swingers. But those are his values and that's his community. And so he comes up to me and he's like, hey, I would like to talk to you. I heard about the incident. And I was like, ooh, I don't know if I want to. And then I grabbed like one of my booze and was like, will you just hold space here for me? And Jerry said, listen, you know, he had earlier said briefly, like, do you want me to kick this guy out? And I said, no. So he comes back to me and he says, listen, this guy really feels awful. He really wants you to apologize. And he sent me to apologize on his behalf. And I was like, I don't want to engage in this conversation.
Right.
And he was like, well, but so here's the thing. Like, I just, you know, I'm thinking about next year and I just really want everyone to get along. And my boo chimes in with, really, Jerry? I don't know that I'm so on board with this guy coming back next year. But, you know, Jerry's thinking about money. He's thinking about sort of keeping the peace. And so he's really like pushing the issue. And so finally I just said, I don't want to have this conversation and I do not accept his apology. So the next day I am recording my like live in front of an audience podcast and he shows up, the guy. Yes. And so friends of mine immediately go over, ask him to leave. He's like confused and is like, I wasn't going to ask a question. I was going to sit far away. And they're like, you're out of here. So essentially my trip was bad. My this event that like brings me a lot of joy and a lot of energy and a lot of was sort of plagued daily by something with this guy.
Yeah.
And I felt like, also, my friends had communicated to him, do not approach Tristan. And I felt like he was still doing it. He was just using surrogates, right? He was actually violating the boundary, but just using other people to do it.
Yeah.
So it felt like boundary violation followed by another boundary violation followed by another boundary violation.
His forgiveness prioritized. That was
his forgiveness prioritized. And then showing up the thing, another boundary violation. So I just did not feel safe suddenly at this place where I feel so fucking safe.
Yeah.
And it brought up just a lot of shit for me. It really made me think about how much emotional work I do at these events that is unacknowledged, unspoken, unseen in some cases, and not compensated in a lot of cases. Like, I spend the most of that event holding space for people who want to tell me their stories, ask me their questions, cry about, you know, there's changes in their body, whatever it is, right? I'm holding space for all these people to tell me their stories, ask me their questions, many times just to witness them, to see them as they want to be seen, to give them permission for being their sexual beings. And it's really depleting. And in some ways, I feel like as a public figure in this scene, I'm very much like a commodity. And that people don't actually think of me as a person.
Right.
But the image that came to me when I was processing this was like a vending machine.
Yeah.
Which is that vending machines don't need to sleep. They don't need to eat. They don't need to take a break. They don't need to sit down for a minute. Like, they actually have no needs. You go to the vending machine, you put in what you want, you get it.
Yeah. I call that jukebox. Like, I feel like
jukebox.
I said, like, don't treat me like a jukebox. Don't just be like, tell that story right now on command. Like, tell that joke right now on command. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And it really sort of shattered my whole concept of what my job was and if I could even do it anymore. Yeah. Because it's a lot.
Yeah.
And if on top of all of that emotional labor that I'm doing, I am then experiencing violation and disrespect, I mean, I felt really broken about the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I had periods of my life where I were very much in a lot of different leather and BDSM and sex scenes. And for the most part, I'm not anymore because it's, I had enough sort of like small incidents like that. And a lot of that was also, and this also happened 10, 15 years ago where all the language around it was not there. So like, definitely I remember having weird things happen to me. And then like everyone I told about, like 90% of them sort of kind of chose the neutral side or kind of tried to get me to see the whole thing. And I was never, and the thing is that like, I do that on my own. I'm fine doing that on my own. Right. What I need in that moment is I need to be seen and be secured. I need to be like validated. Like, yeah, that was really a messed up thing. And that should not have happened. No one's saying that someone needs to go to jail. No one's saying whatever. I just need in this moment to be told, mm-hmm. like, that was not okay, and your feeling that it's not okay is also okay, rather than trying to get me to talk myself out of my
mm-hmm. experience. Yeah. Well, and I think you're right. I think 15 years later, we do have language, right? So someone immediately who I told the story to said, you know, that's a violation of your consent, right? They just named it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes naming it really feels just validating, right? Yeah. And we didn't have... We weren't well versed in that language back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, some people still like, I don't want to, I mean, there were still people in my life who were like, who still managed to validate, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it's always so confusing when it's your own community members and when,
yeah,
you know, and that it just feels a little bit, and it also makes sense because we don't have no system in place. We don't have a system in place.
That's exactly. And so that then as I took it further in my mind, I was like, I told one of the three organizers the entire story that night. So it was fresh in my mind. And you know, he was like, this is awful. This is unacceptable. Has he been told to stay away from you? Yes, yes, yes. You know, what do you want us to do? And I realized later that that question really put the onus on me.
Right, right.
To all of a sudden develop some sort of, you know, punishment / restorative justice model for the event, right. Which is not my job.
Yeah.
And so I felt like, you know, are there rules emailed to everyone before the event? Yeah. Do we all agree to them? Yeah. Did he violate them? Yes. So technically that's grounds for being kicked out. Right.
Right.
But they were not proactive. The organizers, who by the way, are also my friends. Right. They were not proactive about it.
Well, it's also
maybe I'm going to say he was not proactive. It wasn't all the organizers. Right. It was one organizer was not proactive. And then again, that made me feel unsafe.
Right. Right.
Like I understand if you want to have a variety of responses for the only response, like you don't want to have a system where the only response is this person gets kicked out immediately.
Or we're calling the police or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, but there could, you know, you could just start with simple things like a worksheet. Like if the organizer, you know what I mean? I feel like this is where organizers need to take it on themselves to realize that it's not a matter of if these things are going to happen in their space, it's when. Like these things are going to happen. Like part of being human is we cause harm for each other. Mm-hmm. And so we need to have a sort of even a culture in that week, you know, in that space, in the whatever the group that you're doing that you... You say, if something happens, like, here are the people that are going to listen to your story. Here's the, you know what I mean? Like having all the different teams and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And we're just now, I think as culturally speaking, kind of starting to think about that. Like you said, more people are recognizing it, more people are building these systems, but it's still so new and it's still so at the beginning and they're all very untested. And for some of us, we've been doing this work a long time. And so I think there's, for me, sometimes what I feel like, and I feel this sometimes with stuff around trans things where, like I almost have to be careful and stay offline on days. On days if there's like trans people are in the news for a bad reason because there's some fucked up law, but also sometimes when good things happen, it's like I have an immediate burst of like gratitude and excitement, but then all of a sudden, all the shit that I've been putting up with for fucking 20 years, suddenly like, oh, I'm letting it out all at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is a way that what you're reacting to, like you talked about how like normally I know how to do this. I know how to talk back to these. I know how to stand up, you know, stuff like that. So I don't know why I couldn't in this moment. And it is a little bit, I mean, it could just be our bodies change, our nervous systems change. Your is a different thing, you know? And in some ways it means that you're not putting up with as much shit as you used to. Like you probably maybe we knew we had to put up with that in order to be in those spaces to get these other needs fulfilled. But then we started to explore spaces where we could get those needs fulfilled without having to put up with that bullshit. So then it's almost like the second we're confronted with it, I feel a little bit like, oh, excuse me, I have some rage from 10 years ago. I need to fucking let out, right? You know? Mm-hmm. And also, you know, I also just want to say, I know it feels better to like stand up and, you know, like, say something, you know, put that guy in his place and walk away. And that feels like the great resolution, but your body was like doing what it needed to do by freezing. And so you never know, like it could just be like, that's all the energy you had. And so your body, like that was the trauma response it needed to do, which was to just sort of, because you were carrying a lot, you were having to make a lot of decisions in that moment. You were thinking as a person, you were thinking as a teacher, you were thinking as a public figure, like all that stuff that you're talking about. And just, you know, that's a lot of decision-making to be made in the moment about three avenues of your life when there's a stranger that makes you feel uncomfortable and has you cornered in a space, you know? So I think it probably wasn't even that you froze. It's just your brain was just taking the normal amount of time it would be to make a decision, but it felt like you need to make a decision as soon as possible because you're like not feeling safe. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do think this duality of when I act or react, if I had asked them to kick him out, I'm a public figure. And that could be on the fucking internet. And people could be like, Tristan Taramino is an entitled, selfish bitch. Right. And I'm like aware of that. My behavior is being surveilled in a certain way.
Yeah.
And with social media could like blow up at any moment. Like I'm aware that my choices are sometimes limited about how I behave towards people in public.
Right.
Because I need people to like me.
So that you have a business.
Right? To like Tristan Taramino. Yeah. I mean, right. Obviously I want people to like me, but I need people to like Tristan, you know, like if it was a situation where no one knew who I was, right, it would be different, but I'm very aware of being a public figure in that community and a leader even.
Right.
So this also echoes for me some stuff that went on with this event that I produced for 10 years, mm-hmm, which was a kind of hybrid of polyamorous people, swingers, BDSMers, vanilla, tantra people, spiritual sex people, sex positive people, straight people, queer people, all gender. It was like a melting pot.
Yeah.
And at some point, I had conflicts with the co-producers around sort of what the priorities of the community are. Mm-hmm. And this is, again, 10 years ago, right? But I feel like this is at play with this event too, which is we're so excited to have this social event where we can totally be ourselves. Right. And we're so thrilled that we can be surrounded by people who are like-minded and who are like totally dedicated to this sex positivity that in some ways I feel like people don't want to like kill the buzz with rules and rules that actually have to be, people have to be accountable to.
Right.
you don't want to like be thinking it, you don't want to plant the bad things in people's heads by talking about here's what we do when the bad things happen. You
know, right. Whatever. And so, and I think that's fine, but then I think the event needs to be pitched as we're coming here as a group of adults. We want, we have some similarities and some differences and like, you're all on your own. But because it's pit, and that, you know what I mean, but because right. it's pitched as a community that has shared values and a shared culture, right. I go into it not like I'm walking into a swinger club in a city I've never been to with people I don't know. I'm walking into it having a certain expectation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we don't always necessarily know that that's what community is supposed to entail. Like, you know, we just always think about that the community being the sort of warm, fuzzy things and not realizing that it has to be the hard stuff, the caretaking, you know, in the difficult situations. And I think that's why it's sometimes when people throw that word community around, I always feel a little bit like, is it a community or is it a scene? You know, because it's not really.
Is it a part? Is it a community or is it a party?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm not talking out of turn. I've communicated these things to the organizers. So right. I'm not like spilling tea on any of this. Right. They know how I feel. And, you know, I'm not holding them responsible. I'm just sort of saying, this is how I think things went wrong. And right. again, if you think this is an isolated incident, you're wrong.
Right. Right.
I've been in the scene for 20 years. This is not an isolated incident. Right. And so you kind of have to get it together and decide how you're going to handle these in a way that reflects your values.
Right. It's not if, it's when. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we're taking another break. Should I say that? We're going to take another break. We'll be back.
Hey, you guys, it's Tristan. You know me for creating various forms of media centered around sexuality, gender, relationships, feminism, and pop culture. Well, I've taken a big risk and I'm ready to do something completely different. And I'm hoping that people who like my existing work will follow me on this trip. I'm working on a memoir, which is focused on my own coming of age story, my coming out, and it's woven with my father's story. It's about growing up. It's about multi-generational queer experience and history, love, loss, and the meaning of home. This new book and the writing I'm doing now in general is not just a departure in genre from my previous books. It's really outside my comfort zone. I'm hoping that you might take a look, and if you want to support me, you can become my patron on Patreon. I've wanted to write this memoir for more than 15 years, but I've been terrified to share this really personal story with the public. You know, I joke that I'm comfortable telling you about my love of butt plugs, but it feels way scarier to tell you about my family, my innermost thoughts, my mental health, and one of the most significant events of my life, the death of my father. I hope you'll support me. You can go to patreon.com/TristanTaramino. Thanks.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm Tristan Taramino. Here with me is my longtime producer and just all around awesome guy, Raymond. You know him because I like refer to him online and in the show. And but actually, it's just the two of us today. And Raymond's technically interviewing me, but maybe I'm just talking. And he's there as a sounding board. So thanks for hanging in there with us. If you're still listening and if you left, I don't judge you. Okay. So what do you want to know from me? I'm going to stop talking.
Oh no. Okay. Well, I guess I'm curious. So you started to say before the break that you left, you've talked to the organizers. You said, this is where I think went wrong. This is where I think maybe could be what you want to look at the future. And so, I guess, how are you feeling about right now? Oh, I know what I want to go back to. Sorry. You also said that you were like, this is kind of making you question a little bit about whether you want to keep doing this. So where are you feeling right now around that? I mean, especially since you've sort of had a lot of your stuff canceled by this pandemic, you're sort of forced to have a little bit of time to really be a little bit more inward. And I know you're working on your memoir project and things like that. Do you feel like this is kind of shaping where you want to maybe take both Tristan Taramino, capital T, capital trademark, and also just lowercase T Tristan or whatever the person.
Right. Well, you know, I've been doing a lot more work in public health circles. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that in public health circles, there's just entirely different dynamics. I'm not saying there can't be sexual harassment, coercion, even sexual violence and assault in public health circles. I'm just saying when I go to a conference, people treat me as a kind of like speaker. Right. And I feel like this emotional stuff may be going on, but it's not being spoken and it's sort of buzzing in the background and it feels entirely manageable to me. Right. Not that someone can't disrespect me or say something stupid in class or undermine me or be sexist, like all those things happen. Yeah. But it does feel like it does. I think that it feels time limited. First of all, I think part of the idea of being in an immersive 7-day event is not appealing to me for now, for the near future. So something like if I teach a class at Pleasure Chest and it's an hour and a half and there's questions and then I go home, that feels more finite and less sort of like open-ended.
Right, not 24-hour.
Yeah, exactly, not 24 hours. So I think that's part of it. Because I love teaching. I just am obviously burnt out on the public piece of my job.
Yeah. The management, because in so many of these scenarios, you're having to manage the education of the other person who is getting something wrong. You're having to manage the emotions of that person who's getting something wrong. And then you also have to manage your own emotions about what's happening in that moment. So it's a big, heavy job. And I think when we have natural talents towards it, but we don't have a lot of mentorship or guidance in these sort of types of careers, I feel like. Often. Mm-hmm. And I think if we were sometimes in different industries or if we had, or people who have mentors, you know, if you're lucky enough to have that, then we can, you know, pass this information down, because that's definitely something that I think has helped me a little bit. I think I felt a lot really kind of alone. I'm going to give a plug, I guess, for a past guest of ours, Emily Nagoski. She and her sister wrote this book on burnout that was also really helpful. That was kind of, it just really was like a lot of stuff that I've been feeling a little bit that maybe only me and a small group of people have been going through. And then I read this book and made me realize like, oh no, this is starting to become a bigger conversation. Things like that.
Right, right. I mean, it's about boundaries, obviously.
Right, right.
And I feel like I can be quite good at setting boundaries, but then there are times in which I'm giving to people because there's this expectation that I will.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, our nervous system and our emotional lives are like a muscle too. You know what I mean? And those can change as we age, and those can just, it could just be like, there's a reason why people retire from things. Like maybe people aren't an ER nurse from age 18 to 68. You know, most people.
Some of them are, and they have wills of steel.
Occasionally there are. Yeah. They are. But I feel like even a lot of times in those really intense careers, the majority of people are really only doing them for 10, 15, 20 years tops. I mean, that's partly why those people who are in it for 50 plus years get so much attention, because it is so rare. But that it's the exception that kind of proves the rule or whatever. You know, the norm is really more these shorter amounts of time. And it's because it does have an effect on us. And I think people don't realize that, like, it's probably very similar to therapists and counselors, I would imagine, like that type of burnout that they go through.
But they take classes on how to fucking deal with that shit.
Right, that's the
thing. They put you know, they jars of salt under your chairs to soak that shit up.
But they have supervisors, they have the mentorship, they have systems in place, they have continuing education. Like, you're as a sex educator, you don't have that. In fact, in some way, like, you've been more of the a mother and a leader and all these other different types of upper roles, you know, for people. And you haven't had as many people be that for you. And have had to navigate this on its own on top of it.
Yeah.
So, and it's hard work. So, you know.
And also, I want to say part of it, there's so much of it that's unacknowledged. Mm-hmm. So I thought, like, how could you do this work? And I feel like, you know, public figures have to put up with some of these same things like all the time, but they can be paid such an exorbitant amount of money. Right. And they have handlers and they have people making sure that they eat and they sleep and getting them like whatever they need and right. shutting down conversations for them. And so it's almost like if I felt like I was being that well taken care of, I don't know. Do I have a price? Of course I have a price for everything.
Yeah.
Someone texted me and said like, well, you know, of course you have a price for this and you have a price for that, but you would never do that. And I was like, honey, there's a price for everything, including my ass and my soul. But you can't afford it. So then I also feel like that's sort of how higher profile people might do it. Whereas when someone invites me to a conference, they're like, you can do 4 classes, right? And they're not thinking, and they're thinking maybe four classes.
I don't know.
No, they're saying 4 classes and preparation for 4 classes, but they aren't thinking of every conversation I have in the hallway of the venue nonstop for 4 days.
Yeah.
They are not thinking of that.
And also is that like an hour of presenting things, like it takes a lot out of your body. You know what I mean? Like we turn on and we like all that stuff or whatever. And that there's a recovery window that's like needed for that too, that I think people just don't realize. They just think it's an hour of doing something you're good at. It seems so natural for you. It's so easy for you, but that doesn't mean it's not labor. Yeah.
And the majority of the time I love talking to people. I love hearing their stories.
Oh, absolutely.
But it just drains me now, and I don't know why now, but all these things sort of came together at that event, and it's made me think about maybe I need to read that burnout book.
I was gonna say, it's definitely a symptom they talk about. It's like you just feel like the things that you normally love suddenly don't like make
suddenly
you
drain you. They don't like sort of fill you with energy, and you're like hopped up. You feel like, oh God, I don't want to see people for the next 5 hours, or I might like lose my shit.
Do you feel, I guess, how do you feel personally with these? This could be a little bit of a tread lightly, because this is a public conversation. This isn't just you and me talking. I know I've kind of forgotten that.
You brought that for.
But
yeah.
Like how do you feel like being able to repair your relationship with some of those people at the event who maybe let you down a little bit? Have you had any any sort of healing opportunities around that? Any thoughts around that? Or do you feel just a little bit like you are still in the space of needing some time and distance from it?
I feel like one of the organizers reached out to me right away, and we've had several back and forths, and I feel entirely seen and understood and valued and loved and supported by them.
Yeah.
110%.
Good.
I
think that's good too, because it's not mutually, like you can be like, we're good, and also I'm maybe not coming back to your event.
Right.
That's not.
No, I have told. Yeah, I've told them that. Yeah. Totally. I think there's something unresolved with one of them who I felt the closest to.
Yeah.
And I think was basically going through their own shit at the event. And so couldn't really step up in a way that they might have been able to step up in another circumstance. And certainly as someone who's been the producer and the public face of an event for more than a decade, I know that feeling.
Right.
That I have to be kind of in producer mode at all times, and I have to keep the fucking personal drama to a minimum because people need me to be present and to make decisions and to do all of that. So it's like, I don't blame them. I know that there was shit going on for them, but there is like a weird taste in my mouth about it, which I probably have to deal with. Probably I should deal with, right, Raymond?
I mean, yeah. It's going to get dealt with in some way.
Yeah.
Even if it gets buried way down.
Like they may be listening to this podcast now and being like, I think that's me.
You're about to get an email.
It would be, well, yeah. Anyway. I'm not trying to be passive aggressive with this person.
I think because I think about too, like, it's hard to hold space where, like, you've done something and the other person, I mean, I've, you know, been dealing with this even just recently, like having a sort of miscommunication with a friend and feeling like, oh, I feel like an asshole because I made them feel bad. And they know that I didn't have any negative intention. Like, they're very, you know, and very aware, like, well, like, we're sensitive, but you still are still sitting there feeling kind of shitty about this, because you hurt someone, you don't want to hurt someone you love feelings, and you don't want to be misunderstood, and then you also don't want some, all that stuff. And but being unable to sit with it is often what makes people start to make these snap decisions that want to resolve things quickly. Like, let him apologize. I'm here to develop. He can't hold his discomfort about having
100%.
And so he was shooting it out on everyone else. And
but don't you think that's just
uncomfortable
entitlement?
So then they, like, had to.
So then people are caretaking him and passing notes for him.
Right, I think that certainly pays into it. I think that's entitlement is a power structure that feeds a narrative, right? So it's not so much, it doesn't have to originate from that person. That person could not feel entitled to act entitled.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I can totally see how just. I see it all the time, how broken people who are just so can't sit with the hard stuff and so need all this caretake and so put that energy out, and it makes other people feel uncomfortable who also can't sit with the discomfort, who also don't know. I mean, it's just like a fucking domino effect of everyone's boundaries being kind of like blown over and no one knowing what to do with it. And
this is true, I think, like in 90% of the conflicts that I observe and I'm in is, I like to think of the other person as going, like, the person who's doing something or reacting in some way or whatever is thinking, like, what's your anxiety? Because your anxiety is spilling out. It's being projected onto me. It's being couched in these other terms, but you're having some anxiety management problem. And I'm getting the brunt of that. Right. So in this case, it's like, he's having anxiety about this and he wants it gone.
Right. Right. Which is totally natural and human, but we need to let go that this is the one path that we need. This is what resolution is. This is what forgiveness is. Like, that's, there's, we have such this weird misunderstanding of forgiveness. And what I like to tell people all the time is forgiveness is a path. Forgiveness is a path that you walk. It's not a decision you make. It's not just this one thing for someone to necessarily give or absolve. I mean, I know that's just, I feel like that I was surrounded by that narrative and it just doesn't fit things. But what I've experienced is that forgiveness is a path you walk together.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
and sometimes I don't want to walk it. I'm just putting this out there. I don't want to walk it with this guy.
Yeah. Well, it's also sometimes it's just a path that you walk by yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, forgiveness is a path you walk yourself to, and you're letting other people go, you know, and for himself. So I don't even, his anxiety and it is, like you said, sometimes people are putting so much out there. It doesn't matter how together you are, you're going to be affected. Mm-hmm. Right. And then other times, if you are feeling in a stable, good, strong space, then you see what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take it personally,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so I think a lot of times people, I think it's very important, this concept of not taking things personally, but I do think that sometimes that gets wielded at people without realizing, like you're saying, like, okay, yeah, but also I'm a human being having an human experience right now.
Right.
And so
this treads on the oversensitive thing, right?
Yeah.
Treads on being called oversensitive.
Exactly.
Because you're seeing pieces of it and you're feeling pieces of the energy of it. And people are like, calm down.
Right. And it's just sort of like, that's not helpful to me right now because I'm having a physical response. I'm having an emotional, spiritual, physical response that I need to be seen and be welcomed back or to be taken care of or just left alone so I can take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like people are asking us to immediately just fucking snap out of it, get our shit together, you know, and accept his apology and whatever. So
move on, make nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And we don't have a lot of that gray space of like, how do we legitimately deal with accountability? Like, how do we accept that we hurt people? People are hurt. How can we have a system that acknowledges that, that gives people processes or whatever to walk through when it's been like busted up or violated, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
we're going to end this show in a really improbable way.
Let's do it.
It's, you know, we talked about COVID-19 last week, and the podcast collective, Pleasure Podcasts, got together, and everyone is sharing their number one tip for sex and intimacy during the time of COVID-19. So we are going to share one of those.
All right.
It's a non sequitur. It doesn't make sense. There's no way to tie it together.
It's an outtake from last week's episode.
Maybe? It's an outtake from last week's episode. I mean, it doesn't even make any sense, but I'm doing it. So we're doing that. Let's listen to that.
I'm Sunny Megatron from American Sex Podcast. The Pleasure Podcast question of the month is, what is my number one sex tip for quarantine? My tip is, don't freak out about how much sex you do or don't want right now. Stress directly affects libido. And right now, your sex drive might be at zero. Or you might be one of those types that responds to anxiety and fear with increased sex drive. It even has a name, the apocalyptic hornies. So rather being all consumed with, oh my goodness, is this normal? Just take a deep breath. It's normal. You're dealing the best you can, and things might be different for a while. That's perfectly okay. Sometimes just reassuring yourself of this is half the battle. If you want to hear more, check out American Sex Podcast at americansexpodcast.com.
Okay, so you heard it here. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Are you the executive producer now? Are we both the executive producers?
No, I think you're still executive producer.
Okay, executive producer, me. Senior producer, Raymond Johnson. Raymond Johnson also created the opening, edits the motherfucker, books the guests. He does everything except make the art. And make the art. So if you have a problem with the art, shut the fuck up. I don't know why I'm saying fuck all of a sudden so much. Okay, so you're going to tune in next week. My guest is Carly Moore, who is the author of The Not Wives, a novel from the Feminist Press, which is a wild, queer, sexy ride through the early 2000s in New York City. I loved the book and we had a great conversation. So check that out. Hey, if you're a regular listener and you haven't yet subscribed, subscribing would help me so much. Subscribing means numbers, it means downloads, and it translates to ad dollars. Since I've left Voice America, we've lost some listeners who were Voice America listeners who happened to sort of stumble on us and didn't follow me. And so I just really encourage you to tell your friends to review the show on various apps and to subscribe if you haven't already. Then finally, you can catch me on social media across all platforms at Tristan Taramino. And I appreciate you, Raymond, for doing this.
I'm glad you trusted me with it. So I was honored that you asked as well. So I did have to weigh it to give my consent, but it was also an honor to be asked.
Okay, until next time, everyone.